Do you like sports? Do you like Netflix? Well, you might be in luck because this week we interview a producer on the Netflix golf reality show Full Swing. Patrick Devichet walks us through everything he does, everything from how do you ask Rory McIlroy, hey, you mind if I hop in your car with a 50-pound camera? To being on premises at the Canadian Open when the news broke that the PGA Tour was going to merge with the LIV Tour. This one is absolutely fascinating. This is Colby Howard Wants Your Job. Like it, subscribe, share it with all your friends. As always, we're learning together. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome to Colby Howard Wants Your Job, the show where we find out what the heck everyone else does with their day. As always, I'm your host, Colby Howard. Today we have a very special guest. He is a producer on the Full Swing Netflix documentary, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Did you know that?
I didn't, actually.
Incredible. We'll be talking with him about what a producer does. I'm super excited because we see the end result, but we have no idea what goes into it. Patrick Devichet, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Colby. Sure, by the end of this, you will not want my job. But
and a little background here. We are in the middle of a heat wave in New York City. 91 in the dials, and then in the subway, probably around 120 degrees.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely up there.
A Turkish bath.
I look the part. I look like I've been, yeah.
Let's start at the end, because we all see, we sit down, and we watch a documentary. Hmm. Like, that's cool, and then we move on. We see 10 hours of footage. Mm-hmm. How many hours of footage? Wait, what percent of everything that's shot are we actually seeing?
I don't know the actual number, but I think if you include what we shot, which is probably about 150 hours, maybe 200 hours, uh-huh. and then all the archival footage that was sourced and gathered, I think it's probably close to 800 hours of footage Jesus. That went into making the 10, actually, yeah, 8 to 10 hours of a series.
So you're looking at 1%.
A lot of chiseling is, yeah. Yeah, trimming and chiseling, yeah.
Interesting. So, Full Swing, the golf answer to, I guess, let's start Hard Knocks, All or Nothing, and then Formula One. What's that called?
Drive to Survive.
Yeah. Super fascinating, and I, especially with all the LIV stuff, can't wait to talk about that. I would like to start one step before you becoming a producer. Let's read this out loud. Blue Ant Media identified creative talent and projects, both scripted and non-scripted television, to develop and then pitch those projects to streaming platforms, cable channel programmers, and prospective studio and creative partners. It seems like you got things going and got projects perhaps off the ground or put projects together, and then you decided, no, I want to actually do one of the projects. Is that a fair assessment of how this all works?
Definitely. So what you described there, or what you read off my resume, which is a low blow, by the way, low blow.
It was LinkedIn. Fair game.
True. That's fair.
You didn't say like fluent in Spanish, and then you're not fluent in Spanish.
Skills include Microsoft Office Suite. I would say, so development is basically what you just said, is like it's putting together all of the elements before any cameras start rolling. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very, very competitive. For the last several years in the documentary and nonfiction space.
Competitive mean?
I think the dawn of streaming meant that, you know, this is probably a conversation for another time, but basically meant that there was an insatiable appetite for consumption of content, and that basically the fastest way to fill that demand is not scripted shows, actually, in my opinion. I think a lot of people would probably agree. It's nonfiction and documentary, because of the turnaround time is much faster. It's much less expensive to produce. And I mean, if you think about it, 10 hours of Drive to Survive or of the Kardashians, whatever it is people watch, it costs a fraction of what it is to make Black Mirror or name your favorite scripted show, The Last of Us. And yet, it counts the same. It's the same viewership,
same
eyeballs.
Yeah.
You know? So if you're a programmer, which is the people who make the decisions on what to buy basically, and when to air them and how many episodes they're going to have, you know, I think it's a pretty compelling argument to say that, you know, we need a lot of nonfiction content. And that but by competitive now, I mean that everybody got into that space because of how attractive it is. And so pitching a show no longer means just a deck, maybe 2 minutes of tape, which, you know, you film something just to show mm-hmm. a proof of concept. It actually means like putting together a lot of pieces before you even start any production. Here's our team mm-hmm. and here's how we're going to do this.
When the idea for Full Swing mm-hmm. first came up, I don't know what year that was.
It was a long time before I was involved in the show.
Got it.
Yeah.
So you jump on mm-hmm. and there is the general idea of we're going to follow golfers and hope like hell something interesting comes out. Mm-hmm. When you go in, it's unscripted. I don't know how much control you have over what happens.
Yeah.
But like, what is your goal? What are you hoping comes out mm-hmm. of it at the very end?
Well, that's a great question. I just want to back up to one other thing I probably should have mentioned in terms of how competitive it is. Part of what is required now, like I said, is not just the great creative team behind mm-hmm. it, but also how much access you can guarantee to your subjects in the film or the series. So going to the golf series with Full Swing, this show was an idea for probably 5 years, if not more. And the guy who's responsible for that is, his name is Chad Mum. He's my boss. Mm-hmm. He runs Vox Media. He's sort of the godfather of Full Swing, let's call it. And he did a ton of legwork before anything even happened. I mean, you can't just say to HBO or to Netflix, hey, we have a great idea for a show. Wouldn't it be great to follow professional golfers for a season? They'd be like, yeah. So who are we following? And when right. is, you know, who's letting you film?
Can't just show
it?
Up.
Exactly. So a lot of that takes time. It takes trust. It's like not just the PGA Tour. It's also the major tournaments that are not run by the PGA Tour. It's four different organizations
and
altogether.
The players are
and the players themselves,
right?
Correct. So the players individually have to agree to give you a
Jesus.
Certain number of access. So it really does take a lot of time. Any documentary you see requires a really high level of trust, and that begets access to mm-hmm. who you're following. And it's just that makes it all the more competitive. Everybody wants to do this. So you just have to fight for like who can tell the best story. And then at the end of the day, who comes out with the best access and the most time with that subject.
So your boss, odds are he wasn't alone with the idea of wouldn't it be fun to follow the PGA
Tour? For sure.
Tour?
I bet you there were probably a number, maybe like half a dozen other people at a certain point who had the idea that he had. I mean, maybe even I could say I did have that idea when I was like, 22 years old. Right. I was like, oh, this would be cool to do a Hard Knocks of golf. And actually, I think that was initially his idea for it, or his vision for it was to be like a sort of weekly quick turnaround, like on tour, which, you know, you could argue it could work, but mm-hmm. it definitely comes with limitations as well.
Yeah, interesting. So you get the PGA to say, yeah, you can go on our courses. You get the majors to say, mm-hmm. yeah, you can have access. You get the players. I'm guessing, are you choosing, I think the personality aspect of this, mm-hmm. like, I mean, this started all the way back with like Richard of the first Survivor. Like, oh, there's a game within a game here.
Yeah.
Or Tony Siragusa
yeah.
on the first one. Who's like, yeah. oh, I might become an announcer, so I should ham it up. Like, I think some of these players understand that they're now, like, they are brands. Are you choosing people based on personality, based on how good they are on screen? Like, Tiger Woods isn't the most, it doesn't have the greatest personality, but he's got incredible skill. And that's, obviously, we yeah. watched that. How do you think about choosing the players?
Well, I would say as a diehard Tiger super fan, I would argue that he does. There's like he's like a very fascinating person. Uh-huh. I'm not saying here like, okay, Tiger Woods is the greatest human ever. I will say he is a very compelling subject because of all the layers of his mm-hmm. personality. But to answer your question, I think that the choice behind who gets in the show, it's twofold. It's who's playing the best, because I think at the end of the day, these shows are trying to show what it's like to be the best in your craft. Like it, mm-hmm. Formula One isn't successful or didn't really, I feel like it was successful, but it wasn't what it became until they had Mercedes and they had Red
totally.
Bull fully on board,
right.
because those are the people that are winning the races. And the same thing for golf is like, if you have, you know, just the midfield PGA Tour players, it's interesting. I actually think as a golf person, it is more interesting to see the guys who aren't at the top all the mm-hmm. time. But at the same time, if you're going to make this show successful and appeal to the broadest possible audience, you
right.
need the best players in the world to sign on. But then you have like really great personalities as well. Like I think Joel Damon, if anyone's seen the series, but like he's somebody who, you know, is ranked I think, outside the top 100 golfers in the world now. And I think at the time we started filming, it was that still was maybe barely inside the top 100. But the point is, like, the nature of his approach to golf was so different than a lot of his peers.
Got it.
You know, he was somebody that in a lot of ways related, or people could relate to, who were the sort of an average fun golfer who likes to drink beers on the course. He just happened to be really, really good at golf. And I think another element of it was his caddy, who's one of his best friends from his childhood. That's cool. You know, and so, like, it's basically like this sort of sports movie that you're kind of hoping unfolds. And I think we got super lucky last year where we followed him and he was leading the US Open for 2 days. And it was like, could this guy actually do this? Like,
yeah.
You know, and even he himself was probably like, am I really doing this right now? I think those are the kind of stories where it unfolds in a way where you feel like it couldn't have possibly be scripted any better, you know? So just going back to, like, I think it's a combination of personalities and just by the fact that we're on the ground all the time with these guys, and you can tell, you know, in the locker room, who's making people laugh, who's, you know, making crazy comments or doing things that are just like, wow, that's actually a human being in there. Like, it's those kinds of things.
Well, very rarely, if you are the best at what you do, you kind of have to have a screw loose in terms of your ability to focus purely on that. Like, Danny Ricciardo was the star of the Formula One documentaries. He, like, never wins.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he's one of the top 20 in the world.
No, it's true. He's kind of a very good comparison, actually, to like a Joel Damon type of golfer, actually. So, yeah, people love him, but it's not because of how good he is at racing cars.
Right.
It's because of...
He's in the top 1%. He's just not the 1%.
And Joel Damon, I mean, that's the thing. He keeps that in perspective, too, I think, is like, hey, I may not be Rory McIlroy, the number one golfer in the world, or whoever it is, Scottie Scheffler right now, but it's like, he's still freaking good at golf. Like, to be top 100 golfer in the world, you still have to be a very, very good golfer. Like, better than most people could ever even imagine. It's nuts.
And so you said you couldn't even script this. You are sitting down before a season. Do you plan out scenarios? Like, over the next 6 months we're filming, if A happens, we're ready. If B happens, if ZZ happens, how do you think about getting ready for a completely unpredictable set of filming days?
I would say that I think the best way these shows unfold is not by planning and hoping on a result at an event in general. I think that for us, golf is a secondary element. It's a payoff to investment emotionally of a character. By nature of golf, it's probability. You have 150 players every week. I mean, how could you possibly know who's going to win that tournament? I mean, they're all really, really good. In theory, you know, probably more than half of those guys could win any week. So I think once we learned a little bit more about the sort of ecosystem of professional golf, it helps to identify who are the interesting characters, whose backstory is really interesting. Like, guys who, Tony Finau is a great example. Like, if you watch his episode, he came from a really, really poor neighborhood in Utah, in Salt Lake City. And, like, you know, you see him go back to his house where there's like all these dents in the garage door that are still there, even though someone else lives in the house. Uh-huh. That's where his dad set up a mattress for him to hit balls in because it was cheaper than paying for balls at the range. They would go to the driving range just to use the chipping area, which was free. And then they would hit balls in their own garage. Mm-hmm. So, like, just stuff like that, you're like, how could you not want to know more about this guy? You know, and whether he wins or loses, I think you can turn somebody's week at a tournament into a win or a loss, even if it's not a win ultimately. Like, if they didn't get the first place check, whether this guy is like, okay, is he going to make the cut? Is he going to get into the top 10? Like, you can in golf, there are victories that are not necessarily the ultimate, like, first place prize necessarily. I think you can use that, you know, as a storytelling mechanism to add stakes to everybody's individual sort of journey.
Is it a fair comparison? Aaron Sorkin, you have to say every word the exact way he wrote it versus Succession. You're just like, all right, we're going to put like 4 or 5 cameras in the room and we're going to capture reactions and we'll see what happens, but we're going to be ready. We'll capture it if it does happen.
Yeah, I think probably more the latter for sure. I think, you know, there are certain elements of making documentary where you want characters to say something. And I think that's probably generally reserved for the actual interviews that you see. You interview guys usually after a lot of footage of them has been shot. So you want them to speak on things that have happened where there's footage to sort of intercut with what they're telling you in the interview. So, and a lot of times that requires asking them to speak in the present tense. Like, for a lot of these types of sports documentaries, they the interviews are done in a way that makes you feel like you're actually in the moment with that athlete, even though that may have been filmed weeks or months after whatever.
Got it.
So, and they know that game is going on. Like, this is going to look a lot better if you just talk in this manner.
Yeah, so it's not every time, because I feel like you want them to feel like they're being themselves and they're speaking naturally, but certain times it does really help for a viewer to feel like they're really there.
This is a similar question, actually, to when I asked Clay, who writes at GQ. Bad journalists will trap you, will try and get a tweet and get you to say something that you will regret forever.
Yeah.
Bad reality TV, it's like on The Bachelorette, it's like emotional terrorism.
Yeah.
You're feeling bad, we're going to bring in an ex-boyfriend. Like, we're just going to nuke you.
It's
so
like
you
Jerry Springer.
Exactly. Yeah. Is there a world where bad documentarians go overboard in terms of trying to manipulate the outcome and push buttons?
For sure. You know, and I'm not just saying this, but that's definitely not our show, but there are certainly examples, and I don't think I could even name one if I wanted to, but like, I think you can just tell sometimes, even as a viewer, you know, most of the time you have to remember your audience is not stupid. They can tell. Honestly, like shows that are on Bravo, like you just described, I think that's a reality TV trope. I think that's like where you need a scene and you need conflict, because that's the only thing that makes people interesting. I think what's great about sports documentaries is that the conflict is inherent. It's trying to win whatever it is. It's trying to be the best. And I don't think you need much, you know, false drama or conflict.
From a highlight perspective, there's like three or four or maybe five shots per hole, per person. One of them could be amazing. So you almost have a lot. If you want to show like a positive swing, you've got a lot to work with. And if you want a negative swing, you got a lot to work with.
We should get you in the edit room. You sound like you know what you're doing here. No, it's true. I love golf for a lot of reasons, but as a storytelling approach, there are so many examples, just little body language things too, that you can really pick up on. Even when you watch the TV broadcast, like, you know, when they go like super slow motion on a guy reaction, he's like rolling his eyes. It's like those little things. And I think golfers can be really expressive. You just have to like hold it there for a minute and see, like, you know, in a sport that moves a little faster, maybe it's not always so easy to see those things unless you really slow it down and whatever. But like, I think with golf, you can use the action of golf as a propulsion or like a continuation of, you know, the story that you're telling about them. They're having a good tournament. Okay, so show that like four good shots. Ultimately, like the guy's like having the worst week of his life. You just show like four bad golf shots and the reaction, a few of them, you know, and it kind of helps because it's so, it's just like, yeah, golf is an expressive sport, I think.
And when you're thinking about the access, how is your positioning better or the same or worse than all the TV cameras that are already there?
Yeah. Well, we certainly cannot show golf shots any better than the broadcast, not even close. So anything you see in the show, if it's a golf show or if it's a golf shot, I should say, most of the time it's probably footage that was sourced and licensed from a broadcast. Our cameras produce beautiful images, but they're not designed to follow a golf ball 300 yards in the air. It's really like a difference in terms of like the lenses and how like they focus on a subject. If you look at a broadcast camera, it's like everything is in focus. The depth of field is very shallow. It's all designed to be like, you can, if your camera's there, the viewer's going to see it. Whereas for us, it's like we want to be able to get really close on someone's eyes or really close on their hands or just like, you know, capture them in a moment that lets the camera move with them, but it's just a different look. And so you have to remember that that's our strength. Like, our storytelling is not really golf shots. Our storytelling is people who are hitting those golf shots and how they feel about what they're doing, how the people in their lives feel. Anything that like we can do that's not what you see on TV.
Like, let's take Jordan Spieth, who's very good at reacting to bad golf shots.
He is.
He hits it. We watch that. As the ball goes through the air, the focus is on the ball and then it lands. Meanwhile, if you guys just focus on Jordan Spieth as he watches his golf shot, that is something completely different that we never get to see. So there's no real reason to focus on the golf at that point, right?
For sure. And I mean, not to say that there are moments, like, especially because, like you said, he is so expressive. He's one of the most, like, you know, the person who tells you what he's feeling in the moment is probably the best example is Jordan Spieth. There's probably a few others, but like, you know, and he's just so vocal. So he like, he and his caddy, it's almost like you're watching like a sports psychologist, like talk someone off the ledge every single time he's about to hit a golf shot. You know, I think that the broadcasters have know this as well. So they do have a lot of their cameras on him just for the reactions. But I think that there's also, like I was describing, like there's a difference in terms of the lenses that this show uses and the cameras we're using that make it a little more cinematic, a little more artful.
So pre-production's over.
Mm-hmm.
People are starting to play golf. I don't know what that you're now filming, I guess.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Me, personally.
Personally.
So if we're talking about like we get to a tournament, for example.
All right, so you are going to a tournament.
Yeah. Like
okay.
Last week, we were at the British Open, which was at Royal Liverpool.
Amazing.
It was awesome. I mean, I had never been this. I didn't go to the Open last year. This is my first time actually ever at any of them. Like even I'd never been as a fan. So it was just really cool to be there. Totally different style of golf. Totally different environment in terms of the fans and like how, you know, just you can tell you're in another world. It's amazing.
Relative to what? It's a different world.
Just like, you know, the landscape, the way the course is laid out, even just the grass, it's just different. It's everything. Like Lynx golf is a really unique thing. It's like, at least for us it is, because for them, a lot of people over there, that's how they play golf. That's the only thing they know.
When you say Lynx golf, what is the difference between Lynx golf and something else?
Good question. I should probably realize I'm opening up new doors every time I say something. But
I don't watch enough golf.
No,
to
so
know
yeah, it's a good question.
This.
So most of the golf courses you'll see in the United States are known as parkland golf courses, which means a lot of trees along the sides of the fairway. Yeah. Generally speaking, there can be a lot of elevation change. Doesn't have to be. It's a certain layout as well. Like a lot of times you'll see the ninth hole will be back towards the clubhouse. But in Lynx golf, it is very much a layout where you're. All the first nine holes are completely away from the golf course. So you're, in most cases, your 10th hole is actually as far away from the clubhouse as you could possibly be. And that's because they would lay out the courses, and a lot of them were seaside or near mm-hmm. water. Everything was sort of related to the wind and direction of the wind a lot of times. It's also like the type of soil is like really sandy with Lynx courses. It's like it's crunchy, and the ball will bounce in weird directions because it's just like, it's not like this like soft carpet where the, you know, if you look at a lot of, you know, beautiful green American mm-hmm. fairways, it's actually kind of brown and craggly in the UK. And I just love that. It's just like raw nature and it just mm-hmm. feels different. You play a different kind of game. You keep mm-hmm. the ball lower. You're dealing with wind. You just use what's around you. Use your surroundings in a different way. It's really cool.
So you land, you get there for the tournament. What's your move? You land on if it starts on Thursday, you land on a Tuesday?
We landed on Monday. I flew Sunday night, the week before, landed Monday, tried to take like a 10-minute nap at the hotel, and then got to the course. And basically the first thing you do, we have a showrunner and we have a couple of people above me that are like, they're like the generals in the, you know, in the base somewhere that are like mm-hmm. deciding what we're going to do. I have a crew with me. I have a camera person. I have a sound person. I have a PA. And sometimes they even send like a chaperone and make sure you're like following their rules and whatever. Uh-huh. You can't go here. You can't go there. Everything's like by unit. You have your own group and your group is responsible for maybe it's one character or you're going to follow a couple different people. And we sort of just make contact. First few days, there's not a huge set agenda. It's just more of like, okay, we need to get shots of everybody because we're kind of establishing the week. We're saying like, here's where we are. We're at the British Open. We're going to follow Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas and like Wyndham Clark. And the nice thing with us is like, we get all the like full credentials to go anywhere we want. Even though I was telling you, we had like a chaperone. Yeah, yeah. It was like, you know, telling you where not to go. It's like,
but the gym as well,
wherever these guys are, you pretty much are allowed to be. Once the tournament's actually being broadcasted is when they actually care, you know, where you are in terms of relation to their broadcast cameras. But
wait a minute, you like a bunch of guys are working out in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, four dudes just roll up with a camera and a sound guy and like, hey, can we just watch you squat for a couple minutes?
Yeah, I don't know. Like you've watched the first season. I mean, there's a number of scenes or sequences where guys are working out. It's a little bit funny in theory because, you know, we have a lot of guys on our crew who do UFC or hockey or baseball. And it's like, when you watch a guy in a golf polo, like doing like resistant bands training, you're just like, you know. But I think golf has become a pretty physical, people are in much better shape than they were decades ago. But every tournament has like usually they're either in like a trailer setup, like these like big gyms that are, you know, on wheels, or the facility itself has some sort of gym that they all use. And they all have trainers that are there, either provided by the club or a lot of them share a trainer and they all kind of congregate. Imagine like getting the best possible treatment for your body before you even touch a golf club. So you're just like feeling like the loosest, limber, you know. And I think it's, you know, there's a lot of wear and tear on these guys playing 72 holes of golf every week.
You mentioned some people you'll get people to talk about in the present tense things that have happened in the past. are you trying to get them on camera? How are they feeling ahead of it? Or do they not want to talk about it? Or they've signed up for this, so they know they have to.
That's a good question. I think there's a fine line between, you know, what's fair game and what isn't. I think that with the gym, most guys are pretty comfortable being filmed. It's about respect for guys who either don't want to be in the show, like if explicitly said, no, don't put me in the show, who are in the room or next to them. If that's the case, we'll probably back off. Like, we don't need hundreds of shots of guys working out. I would say they are very comfortable with us by now. And usually it's like a quick nod, like, hey, cool, we get a few shots. Like, and then, you know, yeah. And then sometimes we're like, yeah, sorry, do you mind? Like, and like, you know, no problem. Like, we'll step out. We'll, you know, we'll do something else. I think the nice thing about so many of these guys all in one place is, you know, you don't live and die by like needing that one thing.
That's true. They're concentrated in one area.
You just go and find, you know, because we have about every time we go to a tournament, there's probably like 12 guys that we're going to say we need to get something with these guys. And then as the week progresses, whoever of those guys is shaping up to sort of be a story for that week is where you start to focus. But like in the beginning of the week, you're just getting as much, you just do as much coverage as you can. You're sort of peppering.
Just in case.
You're just spraying your camera everywhere and just getting as much as you can just because you don't know what's going to happen, you know? And like, ideally it's not just them on the sort of golf course property, but like getting them in a car is really great because it's just them. It's quiet. You know, sometimes they'll talk. You can get like little sound bites of them just talking about how they're feeling, how their week's going. And it doesn't even have to be like an interview. It's just like them reflecting as they're driving. It's a very useful tool, like for, you know, editing standpoint to have that.
The car reflection always seems to have some good nuggets because they're focused on driving. And so it feels like they just... There's like more exposition that happens when you get them like that, as opposed to sitting down, two people in chairs, me staring at you.
Yeah.
Like, it seems a little bit more free flowing.
Yeah. It's definitely more, you know, anything that feels like you're getting that, whether it's exposition or just, you know, context, their emotional sort of status in the moment is always better, like as it's happening rather than doing so in an interview. Like, you know, interviews are great because they do fill in the gaps for the story. But like, ideally, everything happens, we call verite, is like when it's like you're filming right there, then and there, and that's captured.
Doesn't that car, like the same thing when you were on the jet with Spieth. Isn't this crowded? Like, how many people are in this car?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, also, these cameras are pretty big.
Right. It's like right here on the guy driving.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I would be, it would take a lot of getting used to for me to be filmed that way. And so I give these guys a lot of credit, the ones that have signed on and do it. And, you know, like, that's why it's like, if they want a break, like, you got to give them a break. You got to let them just breathe. It's just the way, I think it's a totally normal human thing. We filmed a guy, like, on his first day coming to the British Open, and it was like, he was with his girlfriend and his agent, and the three of them were in the back, and our camera guy's in the front. He's just filming them from like the front seat facing backwards. If someone like saw that on the next car in the lane over from them, they'd be like, what the fuck is going on? But it's like tight quarters. Sometimes there is a point at which you can be too pushy, too in their space. And you know, that you have to sort of do the calculation of like, is this worth it? Because it could blow our chances to get them later in the week if they're winning the tournament or they're, you know, even, you know, it's like
so what do you mean blow it?
I don't mean blow it like you're never going to be able to film them again. But like, I think there's a lot of like, you need to know that if this is really useful stuff that we're filming, then great and get it while you can. But like lingering on a guy for an extra 30 minutes because you're there can sometimes make them exhausted with you filming.
I gave you everything. I don't want to give
you anything. Like, why would I want to do this the next day? Especially, for instance, like if somebody's like nursing an injury, you want to have them and the doctor's like talking to them about whatever it is going on, have them getting the treatment, and you don't need that much. And I think it's when you realize that this show you can do a lot with a little, like because there's so much of the year that we're filming and following them, like each week that we're there or whenever it's
each
like
each moment isn't do or die.
Not. I mean, there are moments where you're like, we got to get this. But like,
how do you know that's a moment?
When Matt Fitzpatrick won the US Open, like the last shot that he hits in the tournament, every camera in the world was following that. But we had cameras on his family and we wanted that. Like we needed to be there on his family because their reaction, like we could tell they were a really close family. His brother was there, his parents are there. And it's like, if you don't have that, then it's not like our show is doing that much more than what you saw on the broadcast. And it's also just like their they're a great group of characters for us. They're a wonderful family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would be a big missed opportunity to not have like just that, the brother, you know, getting teared up, or like the, you know, the hug between them or whatever. Mm-hmm. A lot of that stuff, again, like there might be broadcast cameras on there, but it's not necessarily the way we would film it and the way we want it. So it's like that stuff that you have to get. And like being on a family on the 18th hole is more important than being on a family when they're eating lunch.
Right.
Hours before, because you just want to be there with a camera. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, you want to be able to save that time for them when it really counts.
And so they start playing golf. It's Thursday morning. Thursday morning?
Yeah.
Where, let's say you're following Ricky Fowler for a couple holes. Where are you standing?
Most tournaments, we are inside the ropes with them, somewhere off to the side. The one thing I know, and you'll notice if you watch any golf on TV, is that the only cameras that are allowed in the fairway are the broadcast cameras. So we can't like be physically in the middle of the fairway with them, mm-hmm. but we can be right up on them in the tee boxes. We can't be physically like on them in the fairway or in the green, just because A, it's a broadcast thing where they don't want us in the shot, but also, you know, we get that footage from the broadcast. So why do we care that much about being there? We're not losing anything. And honestly, like, when we go out and film a tournament, we don't have to be on every single hole. Like Ricky Fowler, for example, like we want to get his tee off. We want to get him walking up to the first tee. We want to get him all his warming up and everything. And, you know, his caddy and talking to him. Like a lot of times it's really great. Like if you saw the Scottie Scheffler thing when he won the Masters last year, mm-hmm. we filmed his caddy sort of giving him a pep talk before. Like that stuff, that's way cooler.
That's awesome. Than
what we could film on the golf course. We're not going to get anything better.
Right. And then when you're actually, and I guess this goes for anything, you've got your crew. Your gang of bandits.
Yeah.
Are you saying, hey, face shot here?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah. We're on radio. We're on radios. Like, here's a good example. At the Masters, a player, you know, he's just finished doing like those kind of post round interviews, and our camera's on him and his, I believe his agent, and his agent's wife is there. And his agent's wife, like, hands him a letter and says, like, this is for you. Like, I know it's your big first Masters, big first week, or whatever. And then I'm like in the radio telling the camera, get a close shot of that thing as well. Cause we already got like probably a wide, we got them in the scene, but like make sure before we stop filming them that you get something close up. Cause you need a context of like, if someone says something, if a subject is talking about something, it's always helpful to have like another insert, we call like an insert shot, where it's like, that's the physical thing that they're talking about. That's just like one example. What I always tell like our cameras is don't focus on the golf as much. The broadcast cameras will film all the golf. So when Jordan Spieth has hit a golf shot, great, we want to film our character, but then let's keep the camera on Jordan Spieth, because the broadcast is not watching him react. Use our camera to get more of our story where we know there's not going to be anything else on that. You know, that's like stuff where you're like, it's helpful to have the walkie talkies because you're just like, it's like quiet. And then it's like, you know, just all the, most of the cinematographers are really good that we have. Like they're all really world-class, you know, they've probably many of them have won like Emmys and stuff for their work.
So when you say get the check, or sorry, not the check, get the letter, whatever, like they know how to get it. You're just saying that's the thing we should get.
Yeah. Operators are very good instinctually at like knowing, like as thinking as an editor, as they're filming, like get different angles of something. You want to be able to look at things from different shots and points of view.
When we hear producer for you, it's almost more like a director.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that's
on the ground director.
It's kind of like they call that field directing. There's another side of this, which is like making sure your access is there. And that means negotiating a little bit with the people like, hey, you know, Rory, can we jump in the car with you when you go back to the range or when you go to this? Is that cool? And you like, you know,
you have to
go over there and the guy might look like he's had the worst day of his life. And you got to be able to like, hey, is it cool if we film? Like, that's the kind of thing where you do need to have like a be able to read people and like an approach that is non-threatening, but also like, look, we're trying to tell the story. Give us 10 minutes and we'll be out of your hair. You know, that kind of thing. If it's like where it's like really delicate. Other times the guys are totally up for it and they're in a great mood. And it's like easy. You just ask them and like, yeah, cool, come along. That's another side of the producing too, is like getting, make sure the access is happening so that by the time your camera and your sound are ready, like, okay, this is where we're going to be. We're going to start filming. Like you're not, ideally, you're not doing both of those things at the same time.
So is there a day when, like, what is a, you doing a bad job day? Or someone in your position, you get back and your boss is like, did you seriously not get that shot? And a great day is, oh my God, I didn't even realize that shot was available and you got it. How does that work?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Not to go over your worst hits.
No. I mean, I've definitely had a few. I think it's definitely like where you just timing was off. You didn't think of something in advance. You didn't anticipate well enough. Mm-hmm. And you just flat out missed something. Like, it's like, that happened. We weren't there. We didn't film it. Fortunately, I haven't been in a position where I've blown access in terms of being too pushy. And it's not always in your control, but it's still on you mm-hmm. to get something and film it.
Liv, so you were in Canada
yeah,
when this dropped?
I was, yeah.
So you think you are just filming another day.
Yeah.
And
we were actually filming a rookie playing in his first PGA Tour event. His name is Ludvig Åberg. He's mm-hmm. a college player, like graduated college this year, but he did so well in his collegiate career that this is the first time this has ever happened. Because he finished number one in the collegiate rankings for, I think it's called PGA Tour U, he was given basically like his PGA Tour card full status for a year on the PGA Tour. And so it gives you a chance to play every event on the tour that you want. I think with the exception of a few of the designated events, he has mm-hmm. to like earn more points to do that. But he's basically like, you know, he's playing in all these high level events as someone who just was in college months ago. So we're filming him.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. And that's why we were there. That's the only reason uh-huh. it was not our usual crew. I had a camera operator I had never worked with, a sound operator I had never worked with. The camera operator was very nice. He's very, very talented mm-hmm. guy, but just not our usual. Like, it's important to have your people sometimes yeah. when there's important stuff. But like, this was not planned at all. Like, we didn't expect this. And
What happens? You get the news that what happens?
As we're driving to get to this, like to film with this rookie, I already see like the headlines popping up. In fact, a friend of mine who, you know, I didn't even know was a big golf guy sent me the story from, I think it's CNBC. And I was like, that's not true. Like, that's
what was the headline?
It was like Liv PGA merger. I was like, that's like PGA memes on Instagram, uh-huh. like a fake, you know, fake headline. And I kept getting more texts like that. And I was like, wow, that this could be real. And so I'm getting calls and texts from our showrunner, executive producer, the people in the UK who run the Box to Box. I'm like, dude, you have to get this. You have to get this. And it's like, you just feel like the anxiety building. And I'm uh-huh. like, okay, well, we're with a rookie in the next few hours more in the morning. Like, this is, I'm like conflicted on what are we supposed to be filming? And also, like, how do you tell a story? Like, there isn't something where you're like physically, like, look around. It's not like people are all just like going to chat about it for you in front of their cameras.
Right.
It's not like there's going to be a scene to capture necessarily. So it was like, what are we actually going to be filming? And it's like, okay, we filmed this rookie kind of walking into this first day as a golfer, as a first day as a professional golfer, and this is happening. So that's actually an amazing yeah. perspective. Like, the TV news is on as he's signing into the registration desk. He's putting in his direct deposit information so they can, you know, wire him money when he wins tournaments. And like, he's doing all those things as the, like,
as
news
the world
is
changing,
the world's changing in front of him. It's like literally like one of those welcome to the world kid kind of like. And, you know, we filmed him for a little bit practicing. And then at one point I was with his agent. I was like, dude, I'm really sorry. Like, we were probably supposed to do this for a little bit longer, but like, you got to go. And
go where?
And so it was like, basically, you know, the hordes of local news are everywhere. The Canadian like journalists are standing outside. It's like, you know, dozens of news cameras. It's like, you're just trying to capture the frenzy a little bit.
What are you capturing? What frenzy are there? How many other players are there?
I mean, it's a regular tournament, you know, it was the Canadian Open. So there was like a pretty, you know, it wasn't a stacked field, but it was still like a number of mm-hmm. high level players were there. And then there's word that they're going to have a player meeting with the tour commissioner there. And, you know, it went out on Twitter that our cameras were rolling and we were filming that day. But like, I will say that like, we were not in the room at that meeting. I went probably three times with our crew, giant camera on hand, like walking in and they're like, get the fuck out of here. Like, what are you doing? It's like trying to figure out all these little ways we could get something. Uh-huh. But like, in general, it's just like reactions to players. Like, it's like getting.
So them streaming out the door and trying to pick off anyone you can.
Yeah. Basically like get people and not most of them are not going to like say anything. They just didn't want to like react. Cause I also think like at that point, they didn't really know what was going on. And it's hard to like speak on something you don't know because it's right. changing every day. So I think really the only thing that is going to feel like is like we were there when it broke and you can really use the frenzy scene. And a lot of this is we're going to learn more as it goes. Still very unclear, but, you know, as a lot of people are like, they have a lot of questions out there, a lot of like, how is this going to look? What's this going to do for me? How's it going to, you know, and that's where you probably need time with these guys to like, let them absorb it, let them process it. You're not going to, as much as it was amazing that we were there in the room, it was really just about the chaos and the frenzy, like, and not like.
Interesting. So thinking about the shot and thinking about the, what we're going to see, the news is going to break. It's going to be look great when a rookie is coming in and signing in. You're going to show the frenzy and then like you might cut to people reacting to it 5 weeks later. And so as long as you got the commotion, that provides the atmosphere around Hopefully. Everyone else's. Yeah.
I really haven't seen much of the footage except for a little bit. But like, I think that it's when you sort of cut it all together and make it, you know, whatever the story is going to be, I think there will be like a, there will be a feeling that like this is big news and it sort of came out of nowhere
yeah.
because it did. I mean, it was essentially leaked.
Well, that's a awesome place to end.
Yeah.
Patrick DeVisher. Patrick.
DeVisher.
DeVisher.
Yeah. That's like the, I feel like that is the way you pronounce it, but it's just like, I can't insist people pronounce it.
No American's going to get it right. I just got it wrong.
It's okay.
This was awesome. Learned a ton. We now know a little bit more about what Patrick does with his day. Thank you for coming on the show. This has been Colby Howard Wants Your Job. I'm your host, Colby Howard. We will see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome.